Welcome to On Balance. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger. I'll be your guide as we explore the stories of today with the personalities impacting tomorrow. Welcome to On Balance.
You know, it's so fascinating to me. Before I had kids, I was always told, you know, it goes by so fast. And when you're in the moment when they're young, that's all you think about is all the different products and solutions and sort of your life, this ecosystem that you inhabit as a parent. And as they get a little bit older, now mine are 11 and 9, you very quickly forget all the things that were so important to your lives as parents and as those in education. And you start to say, well, wait a minute. What are we doing? How are we continuing to support the early learner? And then you have amazing experiences where you focus on literacy and you try to understand how other parts of the world are supporting those in need so that we can level the playing field and hopefully realize some equity across the board. And so, you know, on rare occasions, I get a chance to go down a rabbit hole, and I wanted to go down a rabbit hole to learn more about Ello. I've heard a lot about Ello for quite some time, and I thought, you know what? I think I want to have a conversation and learn more about sort of the brains, the idea, the spirit of a company that I think is doing some really cutting edge things. And selfishly, as many of you know, I've been focusing on literacy, and it was a great honor to be the first inaugural recipient of the International Literacy Award from Pangea with my coverage in Africa and what they're doing around literacy. So this is a softball for me of an interview with a very thoughtful and accomplished co-founder and CEO of Ello. I'm going to give a little background on you, Tom. So I'll embarrass you here in the front end of it as if we're having a holiday meal together as family. But Tom's background, I think, is incredible. And I think it's important that we celebrate those that have taken the time to take the plunge into education, because there's so much that needs to be done and can be done. And it's an exciting industry for those that I think understand it and are willing to navigate some gale force winds sometimes. Before Ello, Tom was the head of impact and adoption programs at Google Education, where his team was responsible for ensuring that Google tools were used effectively in classrooms worldwide. I would imagine that was a full-time gig and then some for those of us that have worked in education. He's on the board of Go Public Schools, an organization dedicated to giving voice to families in the most underserved communities, and on the advisory board of Education Reimagined, the movement builder of learner-centered education. He's also worked as an intelligence officer, a product manager, and founded an edtech company, and has built a mini golf course, yes, in Cambodia. Haven't we all? That sounds like a great story just waiting to be told. He graduated from Cambridge with first-class honors in maths, as they say, across the pond in psychology, and has an MBA and MA from Stanford. He won the Lamar Prize at Cambridge, the Queen's Medal at Sandhurst, the Intelligence Top Student Award, and was a Cybel Scholar at GSB. He loves running, rugby, and lives with his wife and two kids outside of New York City. I think we've covered quite a life here, Tom, and you're a young guy with young kids. I wanted, before we dive into Ello, and I am terribly interested and curious as to the approach that you're taking, because I've seen so many things that have come my way from a media perspective, the sort of the pitch. And I have to, in my head, review it, because I used to work internally in ed tech firms. I understand that space. I understand being in a dev meeting and understanding, gosh, guys, I don't think this is going to be applicable in a classroom. So I want to set that aside for just a second, put a pin in it. And I want to, when you look at the background that you have, and it's not about sort of, you know, this glamorous LinkedIn profile, right? You've accomplished a lot, and obviously this has taken a lot of work. But I do want to get back to the open and a bit of the preamble here and say, help me understand the moment for you when you said, you know, I have these accomplishments and I'm a young guy and I could probably do, you know, a smattering of things. And you chose to go into education. I think that's, some might call it noble, and I don't want to even say that because it is an industry and it's a for-profit industry. But tell me about that decision that you made as a young person. At what point in your development did you say, I can do this and I want to do it?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I'm excited for this chat. So after I left university, I taught briefly. I taught for a year and I was never considering it a career. It was something I wanted to do. I wanted to experience it. I was also using it as an avenue to travel. But clearly something stuck in my mind from back then. I then went off and did a number of other things, as you mentioned. And then I got reconnected to education when I was trying to help set up a charter school in my hometown in England. So the town that I'm from has some of the more challenging kind of educational outcomes in the country. It's getting better, which is fantastic, but it's not a success story. And I wanted to try and change that purely because it was dear to my heart. It was my home. And so I was involved with setting up this charter school at the same time as I was considering a career transition. And I was going to Stanford Business School. I was like, hey, I should go do the master's in education because there's a joint degree program at Stanford. You can do the MBA and the master's in education. So I should go do the master's in education because I'm trying to set up this school. So I should get some more knowledge on education. And then I think it was during my time at Stanford, I actually wrote my application essay to Stanford, the What Matters Most to Me and Why essay, about just how education is everything. How if we cannot support the next generation in achieving their potential, then everything else we're doing is kind of wasted. And I kind of wrote it to get into Stanford, but then during my time at Stanford, I was like, wait, I actually really believe this, and this is what I want to do. And so it was kind of the combination of working on this school in my hometown with then the education I got in education, and then linking back to my brief time teaching that made me want, yeah, this is where I would feel like I'm living a good life if I can do something meaningful here.
You know, Tom, I'd love your perspective on this. When I think about all the educators that I've interviewed, spent time with, I think about those that this sounds maybe very rudimentary, but when those that have decided to work in the industry, it's either that they've decided they want to sort of plug a leak in the dam, or there is a confidence and a poise about them that says, even if the dam breaks, we have got to rethink and or break sort of the traditional approach to how we think about learning, how we think about a student and the context with which they learn in or don't. And we may have to pick up the pieces as they, you know, fall apart, but we're going to be better in the end for it. You've taken an incredible step from my perspective in what you're doing in the literacy space. Because, you know, years ago, literacy, and not even that long ago, it was like, oh, okay, fine. You know, someone wanted to work within the literacy space. And it was, well, they're legacy companies and everybody sort of has a monopoly on this. And you started to see innovators who said, I wonder, what if we apply some technology to this? What if we start to think a little bit bigger, broader, the iPad comes in. What you're doing, and this is where I would love for, I'm teeing this up for you to share the, I guess, the 10,000 foot view on Ello, is looking at something. And what I love about it is, well, I'll let you get to it, but the concept of a child reading out loud, like the power of voice and the relationship that that creates with the technology that we have at hand, I think is incredibly powerful. And you have obviously, you know, you and your team have found that nexus of opportunity, you know, to support young people in that regard. Help me understand the decision about either, and again, if you were there thinking about sort of plugging the dam and leaking when we know about all the issues in literacy, or deciding, you know what, it's going to be what it's going to be. We've got to hunker down here and figure something new out.
Yeah, and I think I was very much approaching education from plugging the dam, which is crucial. Like, there's so many holes that need to be plugged. And when I was working on the school in my hometown, it was that. It was like, someone just needs to do something. We need to do something. Every small step forward is huge and is crucial. I think one of the amazing things about America is it gets you to dream big. It gets you to not necessarily feel as constrained. And so the evolution of Ello, or the birth of Ello, came from, I was working with my co-founders, Elizabeth and Kathleen. Elizabeth is a clinical child psychologist, deep expert in everything around child learning, child behavior. And Kathleen's the technologist. He is one of the country's kind of foremost practitioners in AI. And the moment that we're going through, it was late 2020. The pandemic was in full force, and Elizabeth's daughter Lily, who was 5 at the time, was struggling to read. She was struggling with distance learning, and we'd been working on some ideas, and we kind of said, let's step back. If we could do anything, if we could do anything to help with this problem, which we also know is a problem for lots of parents and for the country and for the world, what would we do? Like, well, if you have all the money, you go get a, in this moment, you go get a reading tutor to come in and sit with the child as they read out loud and support them in that very learner-centered fashion. Give them that one-on-one attention that we know can be so impactful. If you have an amazing teacher, that one-on-one attention from an amazing teacher is trajectory changing. And so we said, well, what can we do that? And Kathleen then came with the technical insights. This was pre-generative AI, and it was like, actually, I think there's been a shift in speech recognition technology that we could apply to children speaking and reading out loud. That means we could do something different, and we could get a little bit closer to that magic that happens when a wonderful teacher is sat next to a child reading out loud. So that was the genesis. It was very tactical, and it was very much about what is the best learning experience that a child could have in this moment, and is there maybe something we could do with technology? It's exactly the same thing I said when I kind of joke, my main job at Google for Education was talking to superintendents, ministers of education, et cetera, and saying like, but why are you getting technology? What's it for? Like, you've got this huge Chromebook purchase scheme, but why? What are you doing with it?
Why? You're right.
And it's the same here. Technology is a tool. Technology is can allow us to do new things, but it's at service of
So tell me,
the
tell me about that conversation then, because what I think is interesting, and you made me sort of go back to the iPad crisis in LA when we had like warehouses filled of, I know, what do we do? But when you're working at Google, this is not your fault or anybody, but when you have that kind of brain behind you, you come, the power differential is in your favor to have a conversation with a school or a minister, right? But now you, when you're on your own or you're part of a smaller team and you've placed a bet on what you think you can do, those conversations then have to change. And I would imagine that when you're speaking with an individual school or a group of schools or a district, or an ELA, you have this sort of battle between nice to have and need to have. And I would be curious as to how you took your lessons at Google and those conversations at a very high level to inform the way in which you could sort of, in a more granular way, in a relational sort of rapport building way, help those from the buyer side understand the impact outside of, now some would call themselves competitors to you. I'm not calling them competitors at all, other than they're in the ed tech space where it's all based on glitz and shiny and, you know, sounds and badges and these sorts of things. Walk me through that conversation and how that might have impacted you over time.
So we the main takeaway was to start off by working with parents, not with schools. Schools are crucial, but in terms of for us getting something off the ground, that's an easier conversation to have with parents. Part of that is what we're really focused on is how do we, stemming from that learner-centered philosophy, is how do we keep the child's experience at the core of what we're building. And in the very first instance, that's an easier conversation to have with parents, because parents are thinking only about the child's experience, whereas schools have a lot of things to think about. They've got budgets, they've got teacher mind share, they've got the state standards they've got to meet, they've got testing and evaluation. And so it was a simpler message. And I think with parents, it also gets to parents care about their child liking reading in some ways. It's like it's motivational. It's like they clearly care about, are they reading? Is their reading where it needs to be in terms of the standard? But there's also something with parents of like, I also just want them to want to read. And that's where I think it's combining the rigor of assessment of literacy progress, but with also the importance of keeping the child's experience at its heart and saying like, are they actually wanting to do this? Because ultimately, everybody, parents, teachers, we're trying to create lifelong learners. And getting a child to really want to engage in reading and open up the whole world that reading offers them is a huge part of what we're trying to do. And for us, that mission, or sorry, that message was easier to share with parents in the first instance.
So let's sort of go back in time, and we're young children. So what is our, walk me through the experience of Ello for a Child.
Yeah, so it replicates the experience of having hopefully a wonderful reading coach sat next to you. So a child reads out loud from a book. Actually, before they even start, we kind of help them, take them through a few kind of learning concepts. Hey, there's going to be a couple of tricky words in this book. Let's have a look at these tricky words before we even get into the book. Exactly what a reading coach would do. And then the child reads out loud. It could be from a real physical book, or it could be from a digital book. We kind of work with both. And we're listening along. Ello, the blue elephant, is listening along and replicating what a reading coach would do. So it's trying to keep the child motivated. It's listening for errors and then walking the child through an intervention when a child has made an error. It's helping the child when they get stuck so that they don't get frustrated and give up on the learning process. And so the child goes through this reading practice. And that's the core of the product. It's focused on that independent reading, that 20 minutes of independent reading that a child is supposed to do every single day from kindergarten through third grade.
And so tell me about the ages, the sort of the sweet spot when we think about ages. And do you have sort of bigger aspirations? Because to me, this has applications beyond even early learning, but maybe I'm thinking too optimistic about what you've built here.
Yeah, our real, real sweet spot is K through one, K through two, third grade, and this will get to the bigger aspirations. Third grade, a child is starting to transition from learning to read to reading to learn. And then in pre-K, the learning process is very different. It's about letter sound correspondence. It's about that early phonological awareness. We do plan to support that. It's just a very different setup. In terms of where we're going, we're very clear that our mission is to teach any child to read from start to finish, regardless of resources. And we're going to do that before we go anywhere else. We're going to try and not get distracted by the shiny thing that's around the corner. Having said that, the technology we're building, we're very excited as this shift in technology in our society happens, to take that shift with a child as they learn to read and move to reading to learn. And so a child is reading the content with us. A child is having a discussion with Ello, and all of a sudden we start to expand what the child is reading, what that discussion is about, and Ello starts to evolve into a infinitely patient, infinitely supported learning companion as the child continues on their learning journey.
Yeah, it's hard. I can only imagine, because just as you're talking, I'm trying to sort of tamp down even the thoughts that I have about, oh my gosh, it's just such a compelling way to engage and to keep the attention. Because I even, you can see it on the faces of kids who enjoy to read and those that don't. And it may not be that they can or they can't or they're struggling with it, but man, if we're not engaging, we don't. I mean, even as adults, if we don't feel comfortable in an environment, we're not going to continue to go back. And I think the same is for the wonderful world of books. Do you consider yourself, Tom, this is a no-brainer in this regard, just given your sensibilities and what I'm already experiencing with you in this conversation, but how much or how often do you think of yourself as a CEO in relation or relative to being more of an advocate?
Someone on my team last week was like, a lot of new people at the company consider you a CEO. That's very strange, isn't it? I was like, oh, thanks. I think they're kind of one on the same. I think we're an incredibly mission-driven organization. Everybody at Ello joins partly because they want to work on something exciting, partly because of the amazing team we've built, but primarily because they care about the mission. There's a huge advantage in, particularly in AI, where it's so hot right now. Everybody's trying to hire the best people. We're doing something that people really, really care about. So everybody at Ello is focused on delivering that mission. And that forces us to care deeply about what we're trying to do. And so bringing this organization to life, as everybody at LO is doing, is in its way, it's our role in advocacy for changing literacy, education, and the magic. It's we have these insanely talented machine learning engineers, and the magic when they're in the room with our insanely talented learning specialists and just seeing them come together to think about what's possible and how do we drive this forward with such a deep individual commitment to what we're trying to do is really phenomenal.
Do you think there are secondary gains to be had in the market when we think about early learning? Sadly, you don't have to say it, I'll say it. Early learning, just as a market, has always seemed to not exactly have been given sort of the secret code into, you know, to get into the room in the market. And it's, you know, it's sort of a nice to have, again, a nice to have. And when you talk to people who are innovating or thinking about starting businesses, they think that the market is too small. They don't have, there's not enough support. The budgets are small, you know, and I'm wondering if something as transformational as what you've built, but also inspiring, right? I mean, when I think about years ago at conferences, educational conferences, and interviewing really smart people that are probably now in the AI space, I remember some of these younger folks saying, I don't know if I want to get into ed tech. I just don't know if there's enough either creativity or bandwidth or desire to sort of push the bounds of creativity and innovation. And I'm just wondering if sort of the LOs of the world really help to, you know, it's not your mission, that's not what your goal is, but I'm wondering if it can inspire sort of other potential founders and innovators that, wow, this is a space that has been untapped. And I think that it has been, sadly, and to the detriment of sort of the development of young people that don't have access to equitable resources. But do you ever sit down or sort of close down at the end of a night and say, you just wonder about the inspiring element of what you're doing?
No, don't often think about us inspiring other people, but it's a really positive thought that I'm going to sit down and think about later. I think the ed tech industry is hard, but luckily the mission continues to drive creative, ambitious people towards it. And the number of teachers who see a problem in education, and there's now more avenues for them to actually get involved and try and do something. It's still not where one would like it to be, but it's yeah. But it's so much better than it was 10 years ago. There's more funding going to innovation in ed tech. And I think this moment that we're in right now with AI, there was, I can't remember if it was Sam Altman, but someone who leading this change was like, they believe that education is potentially the industry, the activity that's most able to benefit from the shift in technology. And it makes sense. Education is such a deeply human process. And I don't think AI is going to get close to replacing what teachers do anytime soon. But at the same time, the magic of generative AI is that it does feel closer to human interactions. And so one of the reasons why I think education has been resistant to change is because technology just hasn't felt up to the task of some of the most important activities in education. And I think there's an excitement right now for the potential for technology to do something that it hasn't been able to do previously. So that's my hope. I think there's so much talent and creativity and excitement in ed tech. There's enough funding. And then this technological shift is giving it a real kind of boost of excitement and energy.
Well, you have a new fan in me. I remember years ago, I was talking with an educational leader and I said, I wonder if there's a way to re, honestly, this was an idea. This is like 2009, I think it was. I remember thinking about reading books to kids because that was what I was getting ready to be a father. And that was just the power of reading, right? And hearing and shared voice in a story. And I remember exploring, I wonder if there's ever going to be a day where we can find some way to capture that magic. You've done it. It's really, really exciting. And I find you to be a very likable, transparent leader. And that's something that we need in education. You know, willing to have, I think the tough discussions, the ones where we don't know what the answer is, we don't know where we're going around the corner. But that's really important. And it sounds like you have a fantastic team. Where can people learn more about LO? Where should they go?
Allo.com. That's our website, but it's not hard to figure out my email address. I'd love to, anybody who's excited would love to hear from them.
And you can also check out, I know that you were profiled, the company was profiled in Forbes in January. There's a lot of buzz around Ello. I'm a big fan. Literacy is something that we should not take for granted at all, even if we live in the West, and many who are listening potentially are in well-resourced environments and or are supporting education. We need to be thinking about this from an equitable perspective. You're doing that in spades, Tom. I want to thank Tom Sayer. He's the co-founder and CEO of Ello. You can go to Ello, that's Ello. com. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger.
This concludes another chapter of On Balance. Connect with me via LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Dr. Rod Berger.